This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, Moadim Lesimcha. How are you? I warn you that I am very irritable today. Very irritable, and it's not your fault, you should know.
Howard, I've been listening to your rants, and I will join in very, very shortly.
Oh, good.
I'd like to start, if I may, seeing as we only have really one opportunity to speak during Chol HaMoed of Pesach. And of course, I hope that everybody had a good Seder. But let's start with the events of today, which happened at the Kotel, because today is traditionally the day at the Kotel when we have the Birkat HaKohanim, the priestly blessing, where those from the priestly tribe, from the Kohanim, gather at the Kotel to bless the people of Israel with love, according to the advert, because of course it comes from the prayer Levarech et Amo Yisrael ba'ahava, and let's emphasize that, to bless the people of Israel with love.
I love
that. So Shacharit, the morning service, starts at the Kotel right now, and the Birkat HaKohanim, the period where the priests will gather together to bless the people of Israel in the morning prayer in Shacharit, will be at approximately 8:30 this morning, South African time, 9:30 in Israel. And of course, because we're in Pesach, we also have an additional service, the Musaf, which will begin at 9:15 South African time, 10:15 in Israel. And we're expecting the Birkat HaKohanim, the priestly blessing of the additional service, to be at about 10:30 a.m. in Israel, which equates to 9:30 in South Africa. And after that, there will also be a prayer for the return of the hostages, for the well-being of the IDF soldiers, for the healing of the injured, and for the well-being of the Jewish nation. 10:45 Israeli time, 9:45 in South Africa. I believe you're all able to join via the cameras online that are at the Kotel, that are at the Western Wall. So those people who wish to partake are invited to check that out and to see if they can witness that. I think that this year will have a special importance. And of course, not only do we ask traditionally every year, why is this night different from all other nights? But I think this year we're asking why this year is different from other years. And part of that, I think, is down to things that are happening on the university campuses, whether it be Columbia, or whether it be the University of Texas in Austin, or whether it be universities in Australia, or whether it be Harvard University or anywhere else. Because one thing I'd like to just make a point about when it comes to the so-called pro-Palestinian demonstrations, whether that comes from the university campuses or whether it comes from these Jewish groups who feel the necessity to gather together and to represent the Palestinian cause. So I'd like to ask the question, what you think the Palestinian cause really is? What, when you say represent the Palestinian cause, what is the ultimate achievement? What do the Palestinians really want to achieve? And what are you supporting them to achieve in the process? And I think the answer to that depends on who you ask. Certainly, it's clear to me, and I think to most of us, that the Palestinian leadership do not aspire to an independent state, to freedom, and to coexistence side by side with Israel. I don't think that that is the ultimate achievement that the so-called Palestinian cause is aspiring to at the moment. There may well be some amongst the Palestinian people who wish to achieve that, but if that was the aspiration, it would have been achieved ages ago. That would have been done and dusted and easy to achieve. And yet it hasn't been achieved. And the reason for that is because that's not the cause. And so when you are supporting the cause, you need to be sure what it is you're supporting, because there are people who have a very positive intention to try to support a cause that will do good, that will achieve freedom, that will achieve coexistence, that will achieve independence, for to allow people to go about their daily lives in peace and security. If you think that you are one of those people who wish to achieve that, then the Palestinian cause is not for you. Because the Palestinian cause is really not a positive cause. It's a negative cause. It's about destroying Israel and about destroying the Jews. That is the Palestinian cause. So if you are one of those people who have become mixed up in this, inadvertently thinking you're doing good and you are trying to achieve a positive outcome, then you need to consider yourself and where you stand again, because this is a very negative outcome. The reality is that many people who are supporting the Palestinian cause know that they are supporting the destruction of Israel and the destruction of the state of the Jewish people. So let's not call it pro-Palestinian. Let's call it anti-Israeli. Let's call it anti-Jewish. Let's call it anti-Semitic. There is no pro-Palestinian cause. This is an anti-Israel, anti-Semitic cause. And if that's what you are supporting, you should know that that's what you're supporting. So I just put that out so that everybody understands where things are. There is no possible way that you can stand on both sides of this. You're either anti them or you're anti us. And that is simply the way that the lines are drawn right now. There is no space to be a little Jewish but also pro-Palestinian, because that doesn't work. Pro-Palestinian means anti-Jewish, anti-Israeli. Those who didn't understand it up until now, it's worthwhile thinking about it and understanding where we are.
Absolutely right. It's very well said, and especially when you look at what's going on around the world. What perplexes me, Anthony, is the video that was released, the 3-minute video that Hamas released, is. Where obviously it was recorded under duress, and it mentions, you know, Netanyahu, the government, not doing enough to get the hostages home, and then you have protests in Israel following that, as though Hamas are issuing instructions to Israeli society. That really, really bothered me, I must say. Give me your thoughts on that. Well, tell us what happened for those who haven't followed.
So this is a video that was issued yesterday that shows Israeli-American hostage in Gaza, Hirsch Goldberg Pollin. We mentioned him, I think, last week or the week before, because his mother, Rachel, has been included on the list of the 100 most influential people in 2024. Let's not forget his father, John, who's also been very much involved in the protest and in the activities of the hostage families. They've both been very, very active indeed. And this video of Hirsch mentions 200 days of war and mentions Pesach. So it gives us the feeling that it's a relatively recent video, that it wasn't done many, many weeks ago. And initially this was labeled as a cynical ploy by Hamas to rile up feelings within Israeli society to create a certain reaction. I understand that this might well have been a response to an American request via Qatar for Hamas to show signs of life. And it was delivered exactly via that route, by the Qataris to the Americans, showing an Israeli-American sign of life, unfortunately with his hand amputated, because we did mention that his hand had been very badly injured and I think amputated already on October the 7th. But he seems to have survived that pretty well. And of course, some very, very harsh words indeed about his situation, giving us cause for concern, but also showing that he has managed to survive 200 days of captivity. So exactly how we are supposed to interpret all of that is very different for each of us. We all have a slightly different response to that. I should emphasize that what we've been seeing, the protests on the streets of Israel, have not necessarily been driven by this video. I know that Hamas would like to feel that this video is what exactly has driven the protests on the streets and some of the strong feelings that we've seen. But those strong feelings and those protests have been happening already for some time. So the whole ongoing situation and the seeming lack of progress towards somehow bringing somebody like Hirsch home, and even if he's the only survivor, we have an obligation to bring him home. We have to do everything that we can in order to make sure that he's released to come home. And inevitably, there might be a few others like him. We don't exactly know how many others are still alive and who might potentially be able to come home. But even, as I say, if he is the only one, we owe it to him and to his family and to ourselves to make sure that he comes home safely, that he's able to participate more in the activities of his family, and to be safe from the wretched existence that he's experiencing right now in Gaza. So this has been an interesting video. And as I say, I think it's difficult for us to blame Hamas purely, because I think this was a response to American request to show signs of life, and they have done so.
Sure, it is really, really frightening. Let's just talk about Rafah. The mood I'm in, I just can't understand what we're waiting for. I feel like Israel needs to go into Rafah, destroy Hamas. It's enough talking, and because that's the, unfortunately, the only way in which this awful war can ever end.
So the whole issue about Rafah, I mean, to say that the element of surprise has been lost would be an understatement.
Sure.
Because, I mean, obviously this has been spoken about publicly for so long. We do understand that the security cabinet is due to meet today to discuss Rafah and to discuss possible negotiations on return of hostages. But the other interesting thing about this is that yesterday, the Chief of General Staff of the IDF, Lieutenant General Herzi Halevi, and the head of the Shin Bet, Ronen Bar, were both in Egypt to hold a meeting with the Egyptian intelligence chief, Abbas Kamel. And apparently it was all about discussing Rafah. So it's being coordinated with the Egyptians. We also understand that some tents have been erected around areas of the Gaza Strip by humanitarian organizations, which is some sort of an indication that they're expecting people to go to those tents, to live in those tents. So the movement of civilians is expected away from Rafah. And so as a result of the civilians being moved away, that should clear the ground for the IDF to be able to go in. In the meantime, in separate reports, we understand that Yahya Sinwar has been seen above ground for the first time since the start of the war, that he's actually ventured out. I don't know whether Israeli intelligence have been able to follow his movements or not, but there were certainly some pictures that were suggesting that he had come out from underground. We had the feeling that he was somewhere in the Rafah area, that some of our hostages might be held there. It's not clear whether an operation in Rafah will really be as effective as we hoped it would be initially. But it seems as if, though, there are movements now towards some sort of an operation in Rafah.
So, and what does that mean? Because it's very, very clear that no matter what Israel has done in terms of the rest of Gaza, that Hamas is still in control.
There is certainly indication that Hamas has an element of control, that those who have survived this onslaught are somehow managing to marshal the forces. And what's clear is that, for example, the humanitarian aid that's coming into Gaza is being very, very, very carefully controlled. We understand that prices have come down dramatically, that a box of cigarettes that once upon a time used to cost, I think, $1,800 in Gaza, would you believe, a few weeks ago, has now come down to a much more reasonable price. So things like that seem to be still under Hamas's careful control. We also believe that whenever this assault takes place in Rafah, and I think that it's inevitable that we will need to do it in order at least to destroy the infrastructure that's there, that there will be a lot of planning on Hamas's part that will have gone into wait for the IDF troops who are going to come in there. So this is going to have to be a very, very carefully executed assault, because we can expect that they will be ready and waiting. I don't exactly know what they might have done with the senior Hamas leadership, how they're going to hide them away and how they're going to hide the hostages away, what their plans are. But one thing we can be sure about is that plans will have been laid in order to await this assault. But I think ultimately that even if not a great deal is achieved in Rafah, and I'm not sure what we can truly expect. I think that this last piece of work needs to be done in order just to complete the exercise that the IDF had intended to undertake in Rafah. The coordination with the Egyptians is also because there is concern that some of the key leadership and some of the hostages might be smuggled from Rafah under the border into Egypt. And we would not want that to happen because, of course, from there, who knows where they might go to. So I think there is also a request from the Egyptians to try somehow to keep that border as secure as possible and not to allow people to escape through the border. But now, with the whole element of surprise having been lost and with this being so long discussed and out in the press, it's very, very difficult for us to really understand what could truly be achieved in this assault on Rafah. It will happen, though.
Yep, that is pretty clear, Anthony Reich. Thank you, as always, for the Israel Report. We can catch Anthony. Oh, gosh, when will we catch Anthony? On Wednesday morning next week, because tomorrow's Friday. Anthony doesn't report for us on a Friday. Monday and Tuesday are Pesach again, and then we will have Anthony back with us next Wednesday morning. It's 8:01.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
Hi, it's Barry Cohen from the Blue Agency. Israel is currently facing one of its biggest challenges ever. All of Klal Yisrael is praying for the safety of our soldiers and the return of the hostages. We hope and pray that our soldiers and security forces will prevail and that they will all return home speedily and triumphant. We hold the hands of our clients and friends who have children serving in Tzahal, who are protecting Israel and Jews around the world. May Hashem protect us all.